2. A plate-class general systems vehicle was quite a simple thing in at least one way. It was 4 kilometers thick. The lowest kilometer was almost all engine. The middle 2 clicks were ship space, an entire enclosed system of sophisticated dockyards and quays in effect. And the topmost 1,000 meters was accommodation, most of it for humans. There was, of course, a great deal more to it than that, but this covered the essentials. Using these broad brush figures, it was a simple matter for anybody to work out the craft's approximate maximum speed. From the cubic kilometrage of its engines, the number of ships of any given size it could contain, according to the volume given over to the various sizes of bays and engineering space, and the total number of humans it could accommodate by simply adding up how many cubic kilometers were given over to their living space. The sleeper service had retained an almost pristine original specification internally, which was a rare thing in an eccentric vessel. Usually the first thing they did was drastically reconfigure their physical shape and internal layout, according to the dictates of some private aesthetic driving obsession, or just plain whim. But the fact the sleeper service had stuck to its initial design, and merely added its own private ocean and gas giant environment on the outside, made it relatively easy to measure its actual behavior against what it ought to be capable of, and so ensure that it wasn't up to any extra mischief, besides being eccentric in the first place. In addition to such simple arithmetical estimates of a ship's capability, it was, of course, always a good idea when dealing with an eccentric craft to have just that little extra bit of an edge, intelligence to be specific, an inside view, a spy. As it approached the Dreef system, the plate-glass GSV sleeper service was travelling at its usual cruising speed of about 40 kilolights. It had already announced its desire to stop off in the inner system, and so duly started braking as it passed through the orbit of the system's outermost planet, a light week distant from the sun itself. The yawning angel, the GSV shadowing the larger craft, decelerated at the same rate, a few billion kilometers behind. The yawning angel was the latest in a long line of GSVs which had agreed to take a shift as a sleeper service's escort. It wasn't a particularly demanding task. Indeed, no sensible GSV would wish it to be, though there was a small amount of vicarious glamour associated with it, guarding the widow, letting it roam wherever it wanted, but maintaining the fraternal vigilance that such an enormously powerful craft, espousing such an eccentric credo, patently merited. The only qualifications for being a sleeper service shadow were that one was regarded as being reliable, and that one was capable of staying with the SS if it ever decided to make a dash for it. In other words, one had to be quicker than it. The Yawning Angel had done the job for the best part of a year, and found it undemanding. Naturally, it was somewhat annoying not to be able to draw up one's own course schedule, but providing one took the right attitude and dispensed with the standard mind conviction that held efficiency to the absolute bottom line of everything, it could be an oddly enhancing, even liberating experience. GSVs were always wanted in many more places at the same time than it was possible to be, and it was something of a relief to be able to blame somebody else when one had to frustrate people's and other ships' wishes and requests. This stop at Dreef had not been anticipated, for example. The SS's course had seemed set on a reasonably predictable path, which would take it through the next month, But now it was here. The Yawning Angel would be able to drop off a few ships, take another couple on, and swap some personnel. There should be time. The SS had never acknowledged the presence of any of the vessels tailing it, and it hadn't posted a course schedule since it had turned eccentric 40 years earlier. But it had certain obligations, in terms of setting reawakened people back in the land of the living again, and it always announced how long it would be staying in the systems it visited. It would be here in Dreve for a week, an unusually long time. It had never stayed anywhere for longer than 3 days before. The implication, according to the group of ships considered experts on the behavior of the sleeper service, and given what the GSV itself had been saying in its increasingly rare communications, was that it was about to offload all its charges, all the stories, and all the big sea, air, and gas giant dwelling creatures it had collected over the decades would be moved, physically, presumably, rather than displaced, to compatible habitats. Dreve would be an ideal system to do this in. It had been a culture system for 4,000 years. Comprising 9 more or less wilderness worlds and 3 orbitals. Hoops, giant bracelets of living space, only a few 1,000 kilometers across, but 10 million kilometers in diameter, calmly gyrating in their own carefully aligned orbits, and housing nearly 70 billion souls. Some of these souls were far from human. 1/3 of each of the system's orbitals was given over to ecosystems designed for quite different creatures, gas giant dwellers on one, methane atmospherians on another, and high-temperature silicon creatures on another. The fauna the SS had picked up from other gas giant planets would all fit comfortably into a subsection of the orbital designed with such animals in mind. And the sea and air creatures ought to be able to find homes on that or either of the other worlds. A week to hang around. The Yawning Angel thought that would go down particularly well with its human crew. One of the many tiny but significant and painful ways a GSV could lose face amongst its peers was through a higher-than-average crew turnover rate. And while it had been expecting it, the Yawning Angel had found the experience most distressing, when people had announced they were fed up not being able to have any reliable advance notice of where they were going from week to week and month to month, and so had decided to live elsewhere. All its protestations had been to no avail. What would, in effect, be a week's leave in such a cosmopolitan, sophisticated, and welcoming system really should convince a whole load of those currently wavering between loyalty and ship-jumping that it was worth staying on with the good old Yawning Angel, it was sure. The sleeper service came to an orbit relative stop a quarter turn in advance along the path of the middle orbital. The most efficient position to assume, to distribute its cargo of people and animals evenly amongst all 3 worlds. Permission to do so was finally received from the last of the orbital's hub mines, and the sleeper service duly began getting ready to unload. The Yawning Angel watched from afar as a larger craft detached its traction fields from the energy grid beneath real space, closed down its primary and ahead scan fields, dropped its curtain shields, and generally made the many great and small adjustments a ship normally made when one was intending to stick around somewhere for a while. The sleeper service's external appearance remained the same as ever. A silvery ellipsoid 90 kilometers long, 60 across the beam, and 20 in height. After a few minutes, however, a smaller craft began to appear from that reflective barrier, speeding towards the 3 orbitals with their cargoes of stored people and sedated animals. All this matched with the intelligence the Yawning Angel had already received regarding the set-up and intentions of the eccentric GSV. So far, so good, then. Content that all was well, the Yawning Angel drifted in to match velocities with Terioka, the middle orbital, and the one with the gas giant environments. It docked underneath the orbital's most populous section, and drew up a variety of travel and leave arrangements for its own inhabitants, while setting up a schedule of visits, events, and parties aboard to thank its hosts for their hospitality. Everything went swimmingly until the second day. Then, without warning, just after dawn had broken over the part of the orbital the Yawning Angel had docked beneath, stored bodies and giant animals started popping into existence all over Terioka. Posed people, some still in the clothes or uniforms of the tableau they'd been part of on board the sleeper service, suddenly appeared inside sports halls, on beaches, terraces, boardwalks and pavements, in parks, plazas, deserted stadia, and every other sort of public space the orbital had to offer. To the few people who witnessed these events, it was obvious the bodies had been displaced. The appearance of each was signalled by a tiny point of light blinking into existence just above waist level. This expanded rapidly to a 2-meter grey sphere, which promptly popped and disappeared, leaving behind the immobile story. Unmoving people were left lying on dewy grass, or sitting on park benches, or scattered by the hundred across a patterned mosaic of squares and piazzas, as though after some terrible disaster or a particularly assertive public sculpture exhibition. Dim cleaning machines, spiralling methodically within such spaces, were left bemused, picking erratic courses amongst the rash of new and unexpected obstructions. In the seas, the surface swelled and bulged in hundreds of different places, as whole globes of water were carefully displaced just beneath the surface. The sea creatures contained within were still gently sedated, and moved sluggishly in their giant fishbowls, each of which retained its separation from the surrounding water for a few hours, osmosing fields gradually adjusting the conditions within to those in the sea outside. In the air, similar gauzy fields surrounded whole flocks of buoyant atmosphere fauna, bobbing groggily in the breeze. Further along the vast shallow sweep of the orbital, the gas giant environments were witness to equivalent scenes of near-instant immigration, followed by gradual integration. The Yawning Angel's own drones, its ambassadors on the orbital, were witness to a handful of these sudden manifestations. After a nanosecond's delay to ask permission, the GSV clicked into the orbital's own monitoring systems, and so watched with growing horror as hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands more stored bodies and animals came thumping into existence all over the surface and all through the air, water, and gas ecologies of Terioka. The Yawning Angel flash-woke all its systems and switched its attention to the sleeper service. The big GSV was already moving, rolling and twisting to point directly upwards out of the system. Its engine fields reconnected with the energy grid, its scanners were already back online, and the rest of its multi-layered field complex was rapidly configuring itself for sustained deep space travel. It moved off, not especially quickly. Its displacers had switched to pick rather than put now. In a matter of seconds, they'd snapped almost its entire fleet of smaller ships out of the system, their genuine yet deceptive delivery missions completed. Only the furthest, most massive vessels were left behind. The yawning angel was already frantically making its own preparation to depart in pursuit, closing off most of its transit corridors, snap-displacing drones from the orbital, hurrying through a permission-to-depart request to the world's hub, and drawing up schedules for ferrying people back to the orbital on smaller craft once it had got underway, while at the same time bringing other personnel back before its own velocity grew too great. It knew it was wasting its energy, but it signaled the sleeper service anyway. Meanwhile, it watched intently as a departing ship accelerated away. The yawning angel was gauging, judging, calibrating. It was looking for a figure, comparing an aspect of the reality that was the absconding craft with the abstraction that was a simple but crucial equation. If the sleeper service's velocity could at any point over time be described by a value greater than 0.54 times ns to the power of 2, the yawning angel might be in trouble. It might be in trouble anyway. But if the larger vessel was accelerating significantly quicker than its normal design parameters implied, allowing for the extra mass of the craft's extraneous environments, then that trouble started right now. As it was, the yawning angel was relieved to see the sleeper service was moving away at exactly that rate. The ship was still perfectly apprehendable. And even if the yawning angel waited for another day without doing anything, it would still be able to track the larger craft with ease and catch up with it within 2 days. Still suspecting some sort of trick, the yawning angel started an observation routine throughout the system for unexpected displacings of gigatons of water and gas giant atmosphere. Suddenly dumping all that extra volume and mass now would be one way the sleeper service could put on an extra burst of speed, even if it would still be significantly slower than the yawning angel. The smaller GSV retransmitted its polite but insistent signal. Still no reply from the sleeper service. No surprise there, then. The yawning angel signaled to tell other contact craft what was happening, and sent one of its fastest ships, a Cliff-class superlifter stationed in space outside the GSV's own fields for exactly this sort of eventuality, in pursuit of the escaping GSV, just so it would know this precocious, irksome action was being taken seriously. Probably the sleeper service was simply being awkward rather than up to something more momentous. But the yawning angel couldn't ignore the fact the larger craft was abandoning a significant proportion of its smaller ships, and had resorted to displacing people and animals. Displacing was, especially at such speed, inherently and unfinessably dangerous. The risk of something going horribly terminally wrong was only about 1 in 80 million for any single displacement event. But that was still enough to put the average fussily perfectionist ship mind off using the process for anything live, except in the direst of emergencies. And the sleeper service, assuming it had rid itself of its entire complement of souls, must have carried out 30,000-plus displacements in a minute or less, nudging the odds up well into the sort of likelihood of fuck-up range any sane mind would normally recoil from in utter horror. Even allowing for the sleeper service's eccentricity, that did tend to indicate that there was something more than usually urgent or significant about its current actions. The yawning angel looked up what was, in effect, an annoyance chart. It could leave right now, within 100 seconds, and aggravate lots of people because they were on board itself instead of the orbital, or vice versa. Or it could depart within 20 hours, and leave everybody back where they ought to be, even if they were irritated at their plans being upset. Compromise. It set an 8-hour departure time. Terminals in the shape of rings, pens, earrings, brooches, articles of clothing, and inbuilt versions, neural laces, woke startled culture personnel all over the orbital and the wider system, insisting on relaying their urgent message. So much for keeping everybody happy with a week's leave. The sleeper service accelerated smoothly away into the darkness, already well clear of the system. It began to induct, flittering between inferior and superior hyperspace. Its apparent real space velocity jumped almost instantly by a factor of exactly 23. Again, the yawning angel was comforted to see spot on. No unpleasant surprises. The superlifter, Charitable View, raced after the fleeing craft, its engines unstressed, energy expenditure throttled well back, also threading its way between the layers of four-dimensional space. The process had been compared to a flyfish zipping from water to air and back again. Except that every second air jump was into a layer of air beneath the water, not above it, which was where the analogy did rather break down. The yawning angel was quickly customizing thousands of carefully composed, exquisitely phrased apologies to its personnel and hosts. Its schedule of ship returns varied to reflect the different courses the sleeper service might take if it didn't remain on its present heading, didn't look too problematic. It had delayed letting people venture far away. Until the sleeper service had sent most of its own fleet out, an action even it had thought overcautious at the time, but which now seemed almost prescient. It delegated part of its intellectual resources into drawing up a list of treats and blandishments with which to mollify its own people when they returned, and planned for a 2-week return to Dreve, packed with festivities and celebrations, to say sorry, when it was free of the obligation to follow this accursed machine, and was able to draw up its own course schedule again. The Charitable View reported that the sleeper service was still proceeding as could be expected. The situation, it appeared, was in hand. The Yawning Angel reviewed its own actions so far, and found them exemplary. This was all very vexing, but it was responding well, playing it by the book where possible, and extemporizing sensibly, but with all due urgency where it had to. Good, good. It could well come out of this shining. 3 hours, 26 minutes, and 17 seconds after setting off, the General Systems Vehicle Sleeper Service reached its nominal terminal acceleration point. This was where it ought to stop gaining speed, plump one of the 2 hyperspatial volumes, and just cruise along at a nice steady velocity. It didn't. Instead, it accelerated harder. That 0.54 figure zoomed quickly to 0.72, the plate class's normal design maximum. The Charitable View communicated this turn of events back to the Yawning Angel, which went into shock for about a millisecond. It rechecked all its in-system ships, drones, sensors, and external reports. There was no sign that the sleeper service had dumped its extra mass anywhere within range of the Yawning Angel's sensors. Yet it was behaving as though it had. Where had it done it? Could it have secretly built longer-range displacers? No. Half its mass would have been required to construct a displacer capable of dumping so much volume beyond the range of the Yawning Angel's sensors. And that included all the extra mass it had taken on board over the years, in the form of the extraneous environments in the first place, Though, now that it was thinking in such outrageous terms, there was another associated possibility that just might. But no, that couldn't be. There'd been no intelligence, no hints. No, it didn't even want to think about that. The Yawning Angel rescheduled everything it had already arranged, in a flurry of redrafted apologies, pleas for understanding, and truncated journeys. It halved the departure warning time it had given, 33 minutes to departure now. The situation, it tried to explain to everybody, was becoming more urgent. The sleeper services' acceleration figures remained steady at their design maxima for another 20 minutes, though the charitable view, keeping a careful watch on every aspect of the GSV's performance from its station a few real-space light-days behind, reported some odd events at the junctions of the sleeper services' traction fields with the energy grid. By now, the Yawning Angel was existing in a state of quiveringly ghastly tension. It was thinking at maximum capacity, worrying at full speed, suddenly and appallingly aware how long things took to happen. A human in the same state would have been clutching a churning stomach, tearing their hair out, and gibbering incoherently. Look at these humans. How could such glacial slowness even be called life? An age could pass, virtual empires rise and fall in the time they took to open their mouths to utter some new inanity. Ships, even ships, they were restricted to speeds below the speed of sound in the bubble of air around the ship and the docks it was joined to. It reviewed how practicable it would be to just let the air go and move everything in vacuum. It made sense. Thankfully, it had already shifted all vulnerable pleasure craft out of the way and sealed and secured its unconnected hull apertures. It told the hub what it was doing. The hub objected because it was losing some of its air. The GSV dumped the air anyway. Everything started moving a little faster. The hub screamed in protest, but it ignored it. Calm. Calm. It had to remain calm. Stay focused. Keep the most important objectives in mind. A wave of what would have been nausea in a human swept through the Yawning Angel's minds, as a signal came in from the charitable view. Now what? Whatever it might have feared, this was worse. The sleeper services' acceleration factor had started to increase. Almost at the same time, it had exceeded its normal maximum sustainable velocity. Fascinated, appalled, terrified, the Yawning Angel listened to a running commentary on the other GSV's progress from its increasingly distant child, even as it started the sequence of actions and commands that would lead to its own near-instant departure. 12 minutes early, but that couldn't be helped. And if people were pissed off, too bad. Still increasing. Time to go. Disconnect. There. The charitable view signaled that the sleeper service's outermost field extent had shrunk to within a kilometer of naked hull minima. The Yawning Angel dropped away from the orbital, twisting and aiming and punching away into hyperspace, only a few kilometers away from the world's undersurface. Ignoring incandescent howls of protest from the hub over such impolite and feasibly dangerous behavior, and the astonished but slow, so slow yelps from people who, an instant earlier, had been walking down a transit corridor towards a welcoming foyer in the GSV, and now found themselves bumping into emergency seal fields and staring at nothing but blackness and stars. The superlifter's continuous report went on. The sleeper service's acceleration kept on increasing slowly but steadily. Then it paused, dropping to zero. The craft's velocity remained constant. Could that be it? It was still catchable. Panic over. Then the fleeing ship's velocity increased again, as did its rate of acceleration. Impossible! The horrific thought which had briefly crossed the yawning angel's mind moments earlier settled down to stay, with all the gruesome deliberation of a self-invited houseguest. It did the arithmetic. Take a plate-class GSV's locomotive power output per cubic kilometer of engine. Add on 16 cubic clicks of extra drive at that push per cube value. Make that 32 at a time, and it matched the step in the sleeper service acceleration it had just witnessed. General base, great grief, it had filled its general base with engine. The charitable view reported another smooth increase in the sleeper service rate of progress, leading to another step, another pause. It was increasing its own acceleration to match. The yawning angels sped after the two of them, already fearing the worst. Do the sums, do the sums. The sleeper service had filled at least four of its general bays with extra engine, bringing them online two at a time, balancing the additional impetus. Another increase. Six. Probably all eight, then. What about the engineering space behind? Had that gone, too? Sums. Sums. How much mass had there been aboard the damn thing? Water, gas giant atmosphere, highly pressurized. About 4,000 cubic kilometers of water alone, 4 gigatons. Compress it, alter it, transmute it, convert it into the ultra-dense exotic materials that comprised an engine capable of reaching out and down to the energy grid that underlay the universe and pushing against it. Ample, ample, more than enough. It would take months, even years, to build that sort of extra engine capacity. Or only days, if you'd spent, say, the last few decades preparing the ground. Dear holy shit, if it was all engine, even the superlifter wouldn't be able to keep up with it. The average plate class could sustain about 104 kilolights more or less indefinitely. A good range class, which was what the yawning angel had always been proud to count itself as, could easily beat that by 40 kilolights. A cliff class superlifter was 90% engine, faster even than a rapid offensive unit in short bursts. The charitable view could hit 221 flat out. But that was only supposed to be for an hour or two at a time. That was chase speed, catch-up speed, not something it could maintain for long. The figure the yawning angel was looking at was the thick end of 233. If the sleeper service's engineering space had been packed with engine too. The charitable view's tone had already turned from one of amusement to amazement, then bewilderment. Now it was plain peevish. The sleeper service was topping the 215 mark and showed no signs of slowing down. The superlifter would have to break away within minutes if it didn't top out soon. It asked for instructions. The yawning angel, still accelerating for all its worth, determined to track and follow for as long as it could, or until it was asked to give up the chase, told its offspring craft not to exceed its design parameters, not to risk damage. The sleeper service went on accelerating. The superlifter charitable view gave up the chase at 220. It settled back to a less frenetic 200, dropping back all the time. Even so, it was still not a speed it could maintain for more than a few hours. The yawning angel topped out at 146. The sleeper service finally hit cruise at around 2:33 and a half, disappearing ahead into the depths of galactic space. The superlifter reported this, but sounded like it couldn't believe it. The yawning angel watched the other GSV race away into the everlasting night between the stars. A sense of hopelessness, of defeat, settled over it. Now it knew it had shaken off its pursuers. The sleeper service's course was starting to curve gently. No doubt the first of many ducks and weaves it would carry out if it was trying to conceal its eventual goal. And assuming that it had a goal other than simply giving the slip to its minders. Somehow the yawning angel suspected its eccentric charge, or X-charge, did have a definite goal, a place, a location it was headed for. 233,000 times the speed of light. Dear holy fucking shit! The yawning angel thought there was something almost vulgar about such a velocity. Where the hell was it heading for? Andromeda? The yawning angel drew a course probability cone through the galactic model it kept in its mind. It supposed it all depended how devious the sleeper service was being, but it looked like it might be headed for the upper leaf swirl. If it was, it would be there within 3 weeks. The yawning angel signaled ahead. Look on the bright side. At least the problem was out of its fields now. The avatar of Morpheus stood, arms crossed, thin black-gloved hands grasping at bony elbows, gazed fastened intently upon the screen on the far side of the lounge. It showed a compensated view of hyperspace, vastly magnified. Looking into the screen was like peering into some vast planetary airscape. Far below was a layer of glowing mist, representing the energy grid. Above was an identical layer of bright cloud. The skein of real space lay in between both of these, a two-dimensional layer. A simple transparent plane, which the GSV went flickering through like a weaving shuttle across an infinite loom. Far, far behind it, the tiny dot that was the superlifter shrank still further. It too had been bobbing up and down through the skein on a sine wave whose length was measured in light minutes. But now it had stopped oscillating, settling into the lower level of hyperspace. The magnification jumped. The superlifter was a larger dot now, but still dropping back all the time. A light point tracing its own once wavy, now straight course, even further behind, was the pursuing GSV. The star of the Dreev system was a bright spot back beyond that, stationary in the skein. The sleeper service reached its maximum velocity, and also ceased to oscillate between the two regions of hyperspace, settling into the larger of the two infinities that was ultraspace. The two following ships did the same, increasing their speed fractionally, but briefly. A purist would call the place where they now existed Ultraspace 1 positive, though as nobody had ever had access to Ultraspace 1 negative, or Infraspace 1 positive for that matter, it was a redundant, even pedantic distinction. Or it had been until now. That might be about to change, if the accession could deliver what it appeared to promise. Amorphia took a deep breath, and then let it go. The view clicked off, and the screen disappeared. The avatar turned to look at the woman de Jael Galion and the blackbird Gravius. They were in a recreation area on the Ridge-class GCU jaundiced outlook, housed in a bay in one of the sleeper service's mid-top strakes. The lounge was pretty well standard contact issue, deceptively spacious, stylishly comfortable, punctuated by plants and subdued lighting. This ship was to be the woman's home for the rest of the journey, a lifeboat ready to quit the larger craft at a moment's notice and take her to safety if anything went wrong. She sat on a white recliner chair, dressed in a long red dress, calm but wide-eyed, one hand cupped upon her swollen belly, the blackbird perched on one arm of the seat near her hand. The avatar smiled down at the woman. "There," it said. It made a show of looking around. "Alone at last." It laughed lightly, then looked down at the blackbird, its smile disappearing. "Whereas you," it said, "will not be again." Gravius jerked upright, neck stretching. "What?" it asked. Galion looked surprised, then concerned. Amorphia glanced to one side. A small device, like a stubby pen, floated out of the shadows cast by a small tree. It coasted up to the bird, which shrank back and back from the small silent missile, until it almost fell off the arm of the chair, its blue-black beak centimeters from the nose cone of the tiny, intricate machine. "This is a scout missile, bird," Amorphia told it. "Do not be deceived by its innocent title. If you so much as think of committing another act of treachery, it will happily reduce you to hot gas. It is going to follow you everywhere. Don't do as I have done. Do as I say, and don't try to shake it off. There is a tracer nanotech on you, in you, which will make it a simple matter to follow you. It should be correctly embedded by now, replacing the original tissue." "What?" the bird screeched again, head jerking up and back. "If you want to remove it," Amorphia continued smoothly, "you may, of course. You'll find it in your heart, primary aortic valve." The bird made a screaming noise and thrashed vertically into the air. Dejael flinched, covered her face with her hands. Gravius wheeled in the air and beat hard for the nearest corridor. Amorphia watched it go from beneath cold, lid-hooded eyes. Dejael put both hands on her abdomen. She swallowed. Something black drifted down past her face, and she picked it out of the air. A feather. "Sorry about that," Amorphia said. What was all that about?" Galion asked. Amorphia shrugged. "The bird is a spy," it said flatly. "Has been from the first. It got its reports to the outside by encoding them on a bacterium and depositing them on the bodies of people about to be returned for reawakening. I knew about it 20 years ago, but let it pass after checking each signal. It was never allowed to know anything, the disclosure of which could pose a threat. Its last message was the only one I ever altered. It helped facilitate our escape from the attentions of the Yawning Angel." Amorphia grinned almost childishly. "There's nothing further it can do. I set the scout missile on it to punish it, really. If it distresses you, I'll call it off." Dejael Galion looked up into the steady grey eyes of the cadaverous dark-clad creature for some time, quite as if she hadn't even heard the question. "Amorphia," she said, "please, what is going on? What is really going on?" The ship's avatar looked pained for a moment. It looked away towards the plant the scout missile had been hiding underneath. "Whatever else," it said awkwardly, formally, "always remember that you are free to leave me at any time. This GCU is entirely at your disposal, and no order or request of mine will affect its actions." It looked back at her. It shook its head, but its voice sounded kinder when it spoke again. "I'm sorry, Galion. I still can't tell you very much. We are going to a place near a star called Esperi." The creature hesitated, as though unsure, gaze roaming the floor and the nearby seats. "Because I want to," it said eventually, as though only realizing this itself for the first time. "Because there may be something I can do there." It raised its arms out from its body, then let them fall again. "And in the meantime, we await a guest. Or, at any rate, I await a guest. You may not care to." "Who?" the woman asked. "Haven't you guessed?" the avatar said softly. "Baer Ganar Hofhoen." The woman looked down then, and her brows slowly creased, and the dark feather she'd caught fell from her fingers.